kitchen window. Blix's plants on the windowsills are still in glorious bloom. Finally, I rouse myself enough to tell her I have a pot boiling over on the stove and have to hang up. I try a new tactic with Jeremy, simply stating the facts. Not coming right home, 3-month residency required for the inheritance, staying here, all is well, we'll be fine.
Whoa, 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 he says. Back up! I've never heard of anything like this.
Yep, I say. Me neither. But there we have it. It is what it is. It doesn't have to be a problem. It just delays things a bit for us is all.
But, wait, it does seem like an odd situation, doesn't it? Having something unusual like that written into a will? Why do you think she did it?
Well, she was unusual.
It just doesn't sound like a very nice thing to do to somebody. You know? No offense, because I know you liked her, but a gift with such strings seems really, well, suspect.
I can see that way of looking at things, I tell him slowly. But what I am thinking is that it's extraordinary how the late afternoon light slants in the kitchen window and hits the scarred top of the brown table. I love this table, the heft and solidity of it, and the turquoise refrigerator. I love that this whole place seems to hold Blix's personality. And how does something like that happen?
Can you come home for a visit, do you think? Or should I maybe come up there and see you?
Okay, I say. I shake myself back into the conversation.
Okay to you coming home for a visit, or okay for me to come and see you?
Either one, I say, and yawn. He's quiet for a moment. Then he says,
Look, I'm sorry I'm not such a good phone guy, but I just want you to know that this makes me a little bit sad. And in case you didn't know, I really loved having you working with me right in the next room, just knowing you were there. And my mom will miss having you to talk to because you just know how to make people feel good, you know? We all need you here. My patients, my mom, me.
Well, I say, thank you.
And this is really temporary, he says.
Right? Oh my God, so temporary, very temporary.
Because I love you, you know. I'm going to be so lonely without you.
I love you too, I say. We'll talk every day. I miss you. And then I add, it'll be lonely here without you, too.
And then, wouldn't you know that when I hang up and turn around, Noah is standing there next to the refrigerator. Shit, I didn't even hear him come back in the room.
He gets out 2 beers and holds one out to me, cocking his head and looking way too amused.
Wow, that was so sweet, he says sarcastically. Really? You'll have to tell me who the lucky guy is.
Actually, it was my fiancé, I say.
Excuse me? Your fiancé? So, how long have we been divorced? And you've already got somebody else lined up?
He's smiling.
What, did you have a guy waiting in the wings or something?
Oh, Noah, stop it. It's not like that at all. He's my old boyfriend, and we've gotten back together, and we have a lot in common, so we recently decided to get married.
Your old boyfriend? Who might that be? Let me see if I remember the pantheon of guys.
He puts his finger on his chin, a pantomime of someone thinking. His eyes are bright with laughter.
Wait, I hope to God it's not the one that ditched you before the senior prom.
No. Please, stop. You're embarrassing yourself.
Oh my God, is it the guy you ditched to go out with the hot guy? It is, isn't it? You got back together with him?
Why are you doing this?
Because I'm curious. Because I care about you. I did this terrible thing to you, and I felt horribly guilty over it. So I'm glad to see you're fine. That's all. Also, I'm a little jealous, maybe. You got over things kind of rapidamente, if you ask me.
I suppose you think I should still be pining for you.
It would have been nice to have at least a 6-month pining period. I think for a 2-year relationship, a person should get 6 months of pining.
Ha! He's gazing at me like he's seeing me for the first time. I sip the beer he's handed me, and then I say I'm going to see if Jessica's around. And then he says that we never actually made it to that burger bar the other night, and why don't we grab a bite to eat now? And the truth is, I'm a little bit hungry, and I can't think of a good reason why not, and so we walk there. I keep meaning to ask him when exactly he might move out of the house now that he knows it's not going to be his, because surely that's his plan. But the conversation is instead going all over the place. Whipple and Africa and playing music and what living in Brooklyn is really like. And I never quite get around to it. Okay, I know this is shallow of me, but all my nerve endings and I had kind of forgotten what it's like to be with a man who is so handsome that everyone stops and looks at him. It's so unfair. Did separating from me and going to Africa have to actually improve his looks? And while we're at what age will looks cease to matter to me? But, well, here we are, me and my nerves and him, and we're laughing and talking, and he's holding court, telling his magnificent stories and being the life of the party, and every now and then his eyes meet mine and he smiles. And I dig down into whatever sanity and strength I possess, and I say to myself, not this time. And when we walk home, with him smiling and taking my arm and laughing about the people in the bar and being as charming and engaging as Noah can ever be, I hold myself very tightly together. I let my footfalls tap out the rhythm as I walk. Not this time. Not this time. And later, lying there alone in the dark, I resolve that tomorrow I will tell him he has to leave. The next morning, I wake up to a knock at my bedroom door.
Please, go away,
I say from the mound of pillows and covers.
That is not a nice way to talk to a man who is bringing you breakfast.
Thank you anyway, but I don't eat breakfast.
What? It's the most important meal of the day, he says. And also, I made my specialty, German pancakes.
He pushes the door open.
Come on, I know you, and I am not buying the fact that you don't want at least 2 bites of a perfect German pancake. Look at it.
Making German pancakes was his specialty back when we were together. They're thick, wondrous concoctions with powdered sugar. Irresistible. Now he's bringing them on a tray with coffee on the side. Bacon. A folded napkin. He's a rich guy, the son of a woman who makes Welsh rarebit, so he has always been all about the presentation. His face is flushed from all the effort he's gone to.
I thought you might like a reminder of happier times. That's all. It's just breakfast. If you really want me to, I'll go away.
It's okay, I say grouchily.
Scoot over. I'm joining you.
He stands there while I contemplate whether to move or not. Then he says,
if you don't mind.
So I haul myself over to the other side of the bed, and he sits down and puts the tray down between us. I tuck my feet under and arrange the covers around me. This is not good. Why are you doing this? I ask him. The pancakes really are perfect, round and golden brown with melted butter oozing across the top. And the bacon is how I like it, snappable. My stomach does a traitorously appreciative growl.
Because this is my way of saying I'm sorry. I'm asking for pancake absolution. And, well, I also want to ask a favor.
What? He grins at me,
Such a tone of voice.
It's just that I kind of need to stay here, so just hear me out, if you please. I promise I will be a good roommate, and I'll behave myself and not throw wild parties. I'll make pancakes, and I'll clean up, and fix faucet leaks. You know, that sort of thing. I'll even put the toilet seat down 95% of the time, which is something I have never been successful at before.
No, Noah. That's an absurd idea. We can't live in the same house. It won't work. You need to go.
But I don't have anywhere to go, he says.
His eyes are twinkling, like he knows how to make himself adorable.
Come on, Marnie. We're cool.
Call your family. Go back to Virginia and live with them, like I had to do with my family. Do whatever your people do when they run out of money, if that's ever happened to any of them. But staying here is not an option. You know it won't work.
I can't call them. I really screwed up in Africa, and they're pissed.
He starts stroking my arm. I pull it away. So teach. You have a teaching certificate.
I'm not licensed here. And I'm burned out. I don't want to teach. Please, Marnie. I started some classes in September, and I intend to stay here while I finish them.
I don't say anything.
Okay, hear me out. Look at it this way. This is a massive social experiment, okay? No, don't roll your eyes. Listen. We were good friends before we were lovers, and we were lovers for a while before we moved in together and decided to get married. And then I screwed up royally, bigger than I've ever screwed up in my whole life. And clearly, because of that screw-up, we're never going to be together again. You've got somebody else now, and I respect that. So, what if we just have this time in Brooklyn, in my great aunt's house? Just this little slice of time while you wait to inherit this place for real. We'll be nice to each other. We'll be friends again, repair all the holes in our relationship. And then, well, when we're old and gray and decrepit and married 100 years to other people, maybe we'll look back and say, wow, that was such a cool thing we did, living together nicely, even though we were divorced and had all that baggage. It can be like a spiritual practice, both of us here in Blix's house. I think she'd think this was really cool of us to do. Closure.
I don't know. I can't look him in the eye. I go to the bathroom and pee, and then I stare at my reflection in the cracked, mottled, wavy bathroom mirror. He calls through the door.
Did I mention that I'll make pancakes? And I'm also throwing in the fact that I'll kill all the spiders.
There are no spiders, I call to him. But I have lost. I know I will say yes. I just wish I knew for sure why I'm saying yes. Is it to please him? Or to keep from being alone? Or is he right, that we really could bring some closure to our relationship? And then I know for sure what it is. I am not really done with him. The place where he lives in my heart, well, he's still in there, still rattling around. And it was okay as long as I wasn't seeing him. I had paved over so many emotions, and now I really, really do need to get over him. So, maybe this will do it. After too much time has passed, I go back into the bedroom. All right, you can stay, but Noah, I hate this. Really. Whether you think it's a good thing or not, I am seeing someone else. Somebody nice, who's waiting for me. I know, he says. Believe me, I respect that. I do. Noah, don't. No funny business. No regrets. Just us. Okay, I say, and he does a fist pump in the air, and then he comes over and kisses me, a chaste kiss on the cheek. But there's a history behind that kiss, and we both know we could tumble right into our old story.
He gives me a knowing glance and then picks up the tray with the dishes, and he takes his arrogance and his kisses and his magnetism and leaves, trailing a little whiff of possibility. I hear him walk up the stairs to the kitchen, hear him put the dishes in the sink, and only then do I exhale, and then collapse on the bed and find myself in tears. I'm not sure what I'm crying for, to tell you the truth. Maybe I'm crying because there's something in me that can't seem to quit him. Or maybe at last I'm crying for Blix, who, despite how everybody talks about her in the present tense, really is dead. And I'm crying because the legacy she left me, this house, all these characters, this life, is something I would never have chosen and don't intend to keep. That's it. I'm crying for Blix's mistake. She was so wrong about me. 27. Marnie. Later that day, when Noah has gone out, Lola brings over brownies, cookies, 2 pumpkins, and a pair of hand-knit socks with hearts on them. The socks are because it's going to get cold here, and the pumpkins are because I thought we should decorate them, she says. The brownies and cookies are self-explanatory. She smiles at me, and I see that she has smiling gray eyes that crinkle up nicely, like they are nested in a crisscross of lines. Grandmotherly, sweet pink skin topped by a haze of gray cottony hair. Blix and I always did pumpkins together, she is saying. Kids will come for Halloween, you know. And by kids, I mean hipsters and their kids. Very entertaining. I blink. Halloween is still weeks away. Why are we doing these now? Lola smiles and heads past me, upstairs toward the kitchen. So, how are you settling in? She calls over her shoulder. It's a fine place to live, isn't it? So, Blix. She looks around, smiling brightly, like this house is an old friend she's needed to see. I'm so glad you're here, I say, when we're both in the kitchen, and Lola is taking off her gray cape that matches her eyes and draping it over one of the kitchen chairs. The way she looks around the kitchen makes it obvious that it belongs much more to her than to me. Ah, she says, and holds her arms straight out as if she could hug the whole room. Wow. So, she's still here, isn't she? I feel her everywhere around. I'll put some tea on, I say. And then let's get to work on these pumpkins. Want to? She's the one who goes and gets the kettle out of the cabinet and fills it with water and sets it down on the back burner. So, tell me about Monday. I guess you got the news? The news? Oh, you mean the 3 months thing? She looks at me closely. Yes, of course that. Were you surprised? Believe me, this 3 months thing was not my idea. I told Blix that was crazy. I told her that you already have your own life somewhere else. And I said that when you give somebody a house, you either just give it to them or you don't. You don't try to give them a whole life in the bargain. But there wasn't any reasoning with her. I guess you know that by now. She opens a drawer and gets out what looks to be some alarmingly sharp carving knives and brings them over to the table. Lola, I say quietly, you get that I didn't really know Blix, right? I've had maybe 3 conversations with her in my whole life. And then she goes and does this. I don't know what to think. Noah was positive the place should go to him and his family, and I can't say I disagree with him. Her face darkens, and she picks up a knife and waves it around in the air. No, Blix would not want to hear anything about that. She calls Noah an unevolved scoundrel, and trust me on this, she did not want him to end up with this place. And I've got to tell you, somewhere in whatever realm she's in, she knows you're letting him stay here now, and she'll probably be all up in things trying to get you to change your mind.
If there's any way she can reach you from the afterlife, that is, and I wouldn't put it past her.
Wait, I say. Is it because he wanted a divorce? Because,
no, it was all long ago stuff. Her entire family has always been so condescending ever since her father died. He was her champion, she says.
Blix was pure love, and they couldn't see that. They treated her with such disrespect, and finally she got fed up with it. No way was she going to leave them her house.
She hands me a knife.
Are you good at this? I've never done it without Blix, so I'm just faking it.
But the main thing is, Blix says she knows you.
She's unexplainable, always doing the thing you'd least expect.
I say to her, Blix, nobody's going to benefit when you go around trying to remake somebody's whole life for them without their permission. And then she says, I have my reasons for what I do. I feel like my whole 30-something years with her has been and still is one big argument. In between the fun, of course.
Do you know you always talk about Blix in the present tense?
That's because she's right here with us.
I know you feel it, too.
I slice into one of the pumpkins, take off the stem, and lay it on the table. I haven't done this since I was a kid, but I used to love cutting designs into the pumpkins. My mother was always telling me to cut out triangle eyes and mouths, but I liked doing spirals and curlicues.
Know what I'm going to miss?
Lola says after a while.
It sounds crazy, but it's the dinner parties. Blix and Houndy gave the best...
Houndy? The lobster man? What happened to him?
He was her true love. They were together for over 20 years. But then, in the summer, she was giving a party to say goodbye to everybody because she knew she was going to die soon. And Houndy died right at the party. Dropped dead, just like that.
She takes off her glasses and wipes at her eyes with a napkin.
Oh, yeah. It was quite a shock to her, to all of us. I think he just couldn't face the idea of life without her, so he went first.
They were something together.
Only people I ever knew whose priority was just to be happy, no matter what.
Most people don't have the knack for that day in and day out, you know?
But they did. They danced. They gave dinner parties. Oh, my goodness, those parties.
Blix was a marvelous cook, but she was even better at knowing who needed to be there to share it with her.
She'd just meet people on the street and become fast friends. They had musicians and poets and homeless people and shopkeepers. People would come again and again.
Her eyes are shining with tears. She gets up to pour the tea into cups and brings them over to the table.
And they do just about anything, she says. That was the thing that struck me the most. Never thought of how old they were or if they were sick. They had all the usual aches and pains, and Blix, as it turned out, had that tumor. And yet she's out there in the ocean, skinny dipping. Even in her 80s, traveling all over. Then there was the year she taught herself the harmonica, and she'd go to bars and play it. To bars, right there with the young people, the hipsters, like she was one of them.
And it wasn't like she was just pulling some cute old lady routine. She fixed them up with their partners and gave them advice and dragged them home with her,
bought them presents. And Houndy, oh, that Houndy. He gave out lobsters like they were nothing more than old rocks he'd happened to find on the beach.
I'd love to be like that. She puts her hands in her lap and looks wistfully at me.
You know, when you watch people like that live, you start to realize that the rest of us are just counting off the days until we die. They were the experts at life.
I slice a paisley shape into the center of my pumpkin. She rescued me at Noah's parents' house at Christmas. I made kind of an idiot of myself, and she just swooped in and made everything all right for me. Got me laughing, telling me outrageous stories, making me laugh.
Lola's face scrunches up while she works on the eyes for her pumpkin.
She does standard-issue jack-o'-lantern triangle eyes.
Oh, yes, I heard all about that.
She was so excited when she came back. She was just stunned to find you. She told me how you reminded her so much of herself at your age. She tilts her head at me, like she's trying to see if I'm anything like Blix, which I know I'm not.
I think she came home full of ideas about you.
But look at me, Lola. You can see that I am nothing like her. Nothing. She got it all wrong about me. I'm the least able person that I know. I'm not even brave. Not the tiniest bit brave. I fling my arm out and knock over my cup of tea and have to run to the sink for a sponge to wipe it all up. Lola moves the newspapers aside and says,
"None of that matters to Blix. I'm her best friend, but she's miles ahead of me. For God's sake, I was a secretary for the Board of Education for 42 years, a place Blix wouldn't have put up with for one red-hot minute. And," she lowers her voice and leans towards me,
"you know how many men I've slept with in my life? Exactly one. The man I was married to for 47 years, a trustee for the railroad. I didn't dance in the streets. I didn't go skinny dipping. And if I had, believe me, the cops would have showed up and hauled me away. We just have to trust what Blix sees in us. Maybe." Then her expression changes.
"Also, aren't you a matchmaker? She told me you're a matchmaker."
"I don't know. Am I? I mean, sometimes I do sort of see when people should be together, but it's not... I don't really know how to make it happen, you know? I just know that it should happen." Lola is smiling.
"I think one of the things you might want to be prepared for is that you're not going to get to stay ordinary. She said you have a big life ahead of you."
I grimace. "Yeah, she told me that too. But I'm afraid there are things she didn't know about me. I mean, I'm appreciative and all about getting the house, but I can't stay here," I say to her. "I've gotten involved with my old high school boyfriend. I'm actually scheduled to get married when I go back home. He's a physical therapist with a practice in Florida, and we've got this whole life that we're planning on. Blix didn't know that was happening, you see."
Lola is still smiling her unwavering smile and nodding up and down like nothing I'm saying makes one bit of difference. "By the way," she says, as if she's just been told to say this, "have you met Patrick? You kind of need to go see Patrick."
I would like to meet Patrick, but Patrick famously does not come outside. So the next day, I bake some cookies and go downstairs and knock on his door. Forever passes, and there is only silence from inside. Finally, I type to him,
"Hey, Patrick, you around? I'm on your steps. With cookies."
"Enticing, but I'm not my best self today, as Oprah would say."
"Did I mention that they are chocolate chip cookies? And that I made them with my bare hands?"
"Marnie."
"And they're hot and just out of the oven?"
"Marnie, has anyone explained to you that I am hideously ugly, disfigured and curmudgeonly and introvertish and possibly malodorous? Hard to know, since it's just me and the cat down here, but one of us is definitely not fresh."
"Patrick, has anyone explained to you that chocolate chip cookies transcend all that and more?"
"All right. I am opening the door. But you have been warned. Also, spoiler alert, I am much better in texts than I am in person. So adjust your expectations accordingly."
And then there he is. He's slightly built, with a black Mets hoodie on, with the hood up, even in the house, and sweatpants. His face is partially obscured by the hood, but I can see blue eyes, some scars, dark hair.
"Hi," I say. "Cookies."
I hold out the platter.
"Hi, cookies,"
he says.
Patrick.
Then we stand there. Finally, he says,
Oh, I'm guessing you want to come in, even though I am doing everything I can to make you feel unwelcome.
Well, I laugh a little bit. I thought I would. I mean, if it's okay. I don't have to stay long.
Sure. Enter the palace. You do now own this place, I believe.
Before I can protest that I'm not there as the building owner, he steps aside with a flourish, and I go into a little tiled hallway that leads into his living room, which smells amazing, like cinnamon and sugar and apples. The place looks more like a computer library than a home. Along one wall is a plywood desk that has three computer monitors blinking away, with various keyboards and a desk chair on wheels. The monitors all have lines and lines of writing on them. Across the room, over an expanse of tan carpeting, is a black leather couch with some books and magazines piled at right angles, and a coffee table. There are pole lamps and intriguing sculptures everywhere.
You have such amazing artwork, I say idiotically.
And so many computers.
Yep. I work at home, so I don't have to inflict myself on the American citizenry. It's a public service I perform, and it seems to require electronics. The sculptures are from a previous life.
I turn and look at him. Even with his hood up, I can see that he's smiling. And, yes, it's a crooked, damaged smile in a face with a ruined nose. He looks craggy and roughed up. I feel myself take in a deep breath, which might have sounded to him like a gasp, but which wasn't that at all.
Oh? What kind of work do you do?
I say. My voice sounds fake, even to myself, probably because I am worried that he thinks I was shocked by his appearance when I was not. I was just taking a breath. But how do I explain that to him without sounding like it's a lie? I look up at him helplessly, hoping he'll rescue me. He looks right at me, and he lets the awkwardness be there in the room with us, before he answers,
Actually, I scare people by telling them what disease they probably have, based on their symptoms. Like, if you go to the website and type in that your back hurts, I'm the guy who asks you to click on further symptoms, until eventually I tell you that you might have back cancer, or that your kidneys are exploding.
Actually? This is amazing because I may be one of your best customers, I say. I'm often up in the middle of the night reading about brain tumors and stuff.
Thanks,
he says.
It's good that I'm here to help you with your light reading.
He lets out a sigh, and I worry that I am boring him. Really? This is so difficult, and I so want him to like me.
And you?
He says politely.
Blix told me that you're something of a matchmaker.
Oh, my God! Has she told everyone that I'm a matchmaker? I am so not a matchmaker.
Well, that's what she said. I'm leaving my house to Marnie, and she's a matchmaker. So I think she'll be very happy here. Exact quote.
Wow. Did she tell you the part about how she actually only laid eyes on me 2 times? Did she tell you that she didn't even really know me? He gives me a mild look.
It's okay. I know better than anyone that Blix had her ways. I'm not going to ask you for your matchmaking union card or anything.
It's just so crazy. I have no idea why I'm even here. I keep explaining to people that I didn't really even know her, that I feel like I'm some kind of imposter getting this house from her. My parents are aghast. Like, who is this old lady, and why couldn't she have left this house to her own family? Why did she pick me? They seem to think it's some kind of punishment, and that I need to be very, very careful. He is looking at me with a little half-smile, or what seems like it might be a half-smile. Hard to tell with the hoodie he's wearing and the fact that his face isn't quite like other people's faces.
And are you?
He says.
Being very, very careful?
Not by their standards, I'm sure. Also, what if she left me the place so I could do matchmaking, and it turns out I'm no good at it? She should have left it to Noah.
I think... Well, do you want to know my true, uncensored thoughts?
Do I? Yes, I do. Tell me. Uncensored thoughts.
Well, my first thought is that Blix didn't ever do anything she didn't want to do. And when she met you, I can tell you this. You made a huge impression on her. I don't know if you were demonstrating your abundant matchmakery skills in front of her, or if she was just discerning them. But she was taken with you. And that was that. End of story. When she decided you needed the house, you were getting it, and nobody else could have it.
But it's so surprising. Who does that?
Blix Holiday does that. Also, she did not think that Noah should end up with her house, nor should any of her relatives from Virginia. She told me that over and over. And now I'm really not going to say any more.
I've been here less than a week, and yet every single person I've talked to has made sure to tell me how little she thought of Noah. Even he tells me that. It must have been epic. Maybe you're the one who could tell me why?
No more. I've taken a vow.
A vow?
A vow of silence when it comes to criticizing other people, particularly ones who were married to the person I'm talking to, and who are currently also living with that individual. It's my policy.
Well, we're not doing that kind of living with, I say. And when he keeps looking at me, I say, it's not that way at all. Believe me. He's only staying here because he's enrolled in classes, and also we're doing some experiment to show that we can live together for 3 months without killing each other. It's so that when we're old, we can look back and see that we were kind to each other. A different sort of breakup. He smiles at me.
I am so not going to comment on any of that.
He leads the way into the kitchen, which is really nothing more than a tiny stove, sink, and refrigerator, all jammed into a little closet-sized room off the living room. An apple pie is sitting on the counter, with one piece missing.
Let's eat cookies, shall we? Or would you like some pie? Or maybe both?
The cookies are for you, I say. And he laughs.
So that's a vote for both, then?
He cuts us each a slice of pie and piles some cookies onto some paper plates, and we stand in the kitchen, eating them. The pie is exquisitely buttery and sweet, with tart apples and a flaky crust. Kind of amazing, actually. I can't stop exclaiming over it.
Yes, I've been experimenting with crusts lately. The old lard or butter question, you know? This time I went with butter. Flakier, with lard, I think, but...
Oh my God, I vote for this pie. Butter all the way.
I'll make a note of it,
he says. We're quiet, devouring our pie, when I say, have you lived here a long time?
He frowns.
In the greenish cast of the fluorescent light from the ceiling, I can now see more of his face. It's a shock, a little, to see that the skin on his face is pulled taut around his left eye, leaving it extra pink and smooth, like the inside of a shell. The other eye is fine, looking back at me with some attitude to it.
Well, 3.5 years, I guess it is now. Are you thirsty? Are you the kind of person who wants milk with your pie?
No, that's okay, I say. So, did you know Blix before that?
Nope. Met her outside the art museum one day. I was having, shall we say, a rather unfortunate moment, and suddenly, there she was, bossing me around, even though I was a stranger. Talked to me for a while, and then said I had to come live in her building.
Really? And so you did? You just moved in here because she told you to.
And didn't you come here because she told you to?
Well, I mean... I guess I did, when you put it that way.
Yeah, she knows things about where people are supposed to be. So, am I allowed to ask the big question? Now that you've purchased a coat, may I assume this means you are intending to become a Brooklynista for good? Are you staying?
This is when it hits me, really, that my decision to sell the place actually affects his life. What if he has to move? I put down my plate on the counter. I feel weird about saying this, but I don't think I'm staying, really. I've kind of got a life to get back to, and I'm not really a city person, you know? Blix wrote into the deal that I need to stay for 3 months, so of course I'll do that.
Yeah, I knew about the 3 months.
Really? Did she tell everyone everything?
Everyone? I'm not sure everyone in Brooklyn knows about it, but we, her closest friends, certainly do.
So people are going to be upset if I don't stay here. I'll be abandoning her plan. Is that right?
It's not like we all expected everything to stay the same forever. If this isn't the life you want, then you shouldn't feel you have to have it. I don't think Blix ever intended that you should be a prisoner here.
But, oh man, I feel guilty. She obviously believed I'd keep it.
Oh, Marnie, for heaven's sake, don't put that on yourself. Maybe she gave you first dibs on the house. But if you don't want it, then we just have to know that she's operating in the unseen realm and will bring around the next person who should get it. How's that?
I stare at him until he asks me to stop looking at him. He says he can't bear it when people stare at him. Then he says,
anyway, the very last thing Blix would have ever wanted from you is guilt. Either keep the house or pass it along to someone else. Suit yourself. That's what she would have wanted. Do what makes you happy.
But what will you do if I sell it? He stiffens.
What will I do? I'll either stay here or I'll go someplace else. And so will Jessica and Sammy. We're all very portable humans, you know. I realize I look like a guy who doesn't have any options, but even I can find another place to live.
I feel my face reddening. I'm sorry, I didn't mean...
No more sorry or guilt for this conversation. It's met its quota.
Just then, a tabby cat comes running into the room, meowing like he's in mid-conversation and needs to tell Patrick something immediately. And who is this? Are you the guy who steals Patrick's wallet and orders cans of tuna on the internet? I lean down to pet him, and he runs right over and brushes against my hands.
This is Roy. He's the real tenant here, and he's after your cookies. I'm the one who misses Blix, and he's the one who thinks we should have cookies and possibly fry up some fish and clean the litter box more often.
I straighten myself up. You miss her? I'm sorry. It must feel like a huge loss. He turns away a bit, looks toward the living room.
I do. Very much. And although it's been great to meet you, I'm afraid I really do have to get back to alarming the population about rheumatoid arthritis.
Oh, of course, I say. And Patrick, thank you. It really is so nice to meet you. I want to say to him that he is far from hideous, that the light that shines out from his eyes knocks me right out. But how do you say those things? So I stick out my hand, and after only a flicker of hesitation, he takes it. His hand is leathery, and I can feel the rough ridge where new tissues were probably grafted on. I feel an involuntary shiver go through me, and Patrick looks right into my eyes.
You see?
He says.
I warn people, but it gets them every time just the same.
And then the very worst thing happens, which is that as I'm backing out of the room, I turn too quickly toward the front door and trip on a piece of carpet and bonk myself into a sculpture that's sitting on the bookshelf, and it goes toppling over into the bank of computers, bouncing once and then smashing on the floor. Oh no, oh my God, oh I am so sorry, I say. But even as he's shrugging his shoulders and telling me I shouldn't worry about it, I notice he's heading for the kitchen. probably looking for paper towels or a broom. I say that I'll sweep things up, but he keeps saying,
I shouldn't have left that piece there. It could have happened to anyone.
No, it's me. I'm far too clumsy, I tell him. I'm so, so very sorry. I feel like I'm about to cry. I am over the top sad and crazy, and finally there is nothing to do but leave. The quota of sorries has been said for the whole day, and I have to leave this sad, funny man sweeping up shards of a sculpture that he probably made with his whole heart and soul, and that I have now broken forever.
28. Marnie. The next week, Jessica takes me out for Brooklyn lessons. Apparently, I have not been doing well at Brooklynizing myself. It's all because I referred to the subway as the metro. I mean, I knew it was the subway, but I figured the words metro and subway were interchangeable. Same thing, right? Wrong. Then I said that Lola was sweeping the steps, not the stoop. Then later, I called Paco's store down the street a convenience store. That brought Jessica charging right down the stairs, banging on the door, and holding up her phone and laughing. Has no one ever said the word bodega to you? She said. I thought a bodega was kind of a bar and possible whorehouse, I said, and that made her come over and hug me. She was laughing so hard. Okay, what's the cheese they put on pies? And by pie, I mean pizza. Pies are pizza? No, pizzas are pies. Come on, what's the cheese? Mozzarella? No! Oh, my God! It's mozzarella. You can call it moots if you want. Do not say mozzarella in a restaurant around here. Promise me. And do not ever let anyone see you eating pizza with a fork, no matter how hot it is or how hungry you are. The ridicule and shame will be everlasting. So today, her day off, we ride on the subway, where you can use a Metro card, but God forbid you call the whole enterprise the Metro. I still like driving a car the best, I tell her, except here, where I'd probably go insane and start driving on the sidewalk. You're such a Californian and Floridian. Subways are much better for people watching, although it's very important that you do not make direct eye contact. The best part is that you get to learn gymnastics routines on the subway when the school kids get on. The gold shimmers so much, I am nearly blinded. I know what that means. It means that Jessica is going to start talking about Andrew again. She thinks she's complaining about him, but as I watch her speak, all I can see is the pink aura around her and the way her face lights up when she talks about him. Oh, but there is such a wounded heart underneath that light. It's okay. She'll be okay. Later, I give money to a homeless man who tells me he has a secret for me. He was once president of the United States, he whispers, but they made him sleep outside the White House in the park, so he resigned. He says that there are some things people should not have to put up with, especially when they're too hungry. And so I go into Brooklyn Muffin and buy him a sandwich, and when I come out and give it to him, Jessica shakes her head and says I am just like Blix. Walking home, we're on Bedford Avenue when I see an adorable little flower shop with pots of chrysanthemums and other greenery outside on the sidewalk. The name, scrawled on the door, in white script, is Best Buds, and I know I have to go in there. You know what? You can head home if you want, but I need to get Patrick some flowers. Jessica's eyebrows go up in little peaks. You have to get Patrick? Some flowers. Yes, I took him some cookies the other day and... Wait, you took him some cookies? Will you stop it? Yes, I took him some chocolate chip cookies because I wanted to meet him, and we were having a conversation, and things got a little animated, and I knocked one of his sculptures off the table and smashed it. Oh, no. Oh, yes. It was kind of horrible, actually. So I've been trying to think of how to make it up to him. And maybe flowers would be nice. It's kind of drab in his apartment.
Is it?
He's never invited me in.
Besides the smashing of his artwork, I think I made at least 500 other mistakes with him.
He's tough. Only Blix had the magic touch with him. I've never been able to get so much as a conversation going.
She shifts her bag to her other shoulder.
Listen, she says. If you don't mind, I'm going to head straight home. Sammy's going to be getting off the school bus soon, and I should meet him. Good luck with your Patrick project, though.
She wrinkles her nose.
You're kind of sweet. You know that?
She starts down the street and then turns and points at me.
The cheese on the pizza! Go! Moots! And how do we eat pizza? With our hands!
It's glorious inside Best Buds, all tropically fragrant and moist, with greenery in every corner, along with spikes of flowers. Roses, tulips, Gerbera daisies, mums.
The perfect place for a Floridian.
Orchids tower in one corner of the softly illuminated cooler, looking like birds preparing for takeoff. I take deep breaths and try to think what would be the best flower for Patrick, the Gerbera daisy or the mum plant. An orchid he'd have to take care of, or a bouquet of roses. I finally take a bouquet of red and yellow roses up to the front counter and wait in line to be rung up by the slightly harried cashier. Two women are standing at the counter, looking unhappy, and the dark-haired one says to the other,
"Come on! We're getting a baby because of him, and I want to thank him. I'll write him the letter, if you won't."
The other woman, who is wearing a ponytail and an emerald green pashmina that I am coveting, folds her arms over her chest and says, "No, the flowers are enough, more than enough. If you write to him, believe me, he'll be over all the time. I know this guy. He'll be all up in our business."
"Some daisies and a nice short letter, then. He doesn't even know yet that the pregnancy test was positive. I think he deserves to know that."
The ponytailed woman scowls and looks away. Our eyes meet, and she suddenly laughs.
"Can you believe this conversation?" she says to me. "How to thank your sperm donor and make sure he knows he's only a sperm donor."
"Well," I say, "what about this? What if you sent him the flowers and a card that says, 'Thanks for the strong swimmers, we got a hit'?" They look at each other and grin. And then the first woman grabs the pen and writes my message on the card, and they both give me a high five. After they leave, the next man in line orders a gigantic bouquet. The cashier, who by now has chattily told me that her name is Dorothy and that she's actually the owner of the shop, is trying to get his bouquet just right. He's kind of grim-faced and unhappy-looking, with such a muddy aura. Then the woman in line behind him laughs and says to him,
"Wow! Dude, tell me this. Are you in trouble at home, or are you just a fantastic person?"
I see Dorothy flinch a little, and the man looks down at his shoes and mumbles in a low, dreadful voice,
"Not in trouble? My wife died of breast cancer 2 months ago, and every Friday I put a bouquet on her grave."
There's a horrible silence as he reaches over and takes the bouquet. Dorothy thanks him and squeezes his hand. Nobody knows where to look, and I don't know who I feel sorrier for, the woman customer or him. She's turned the color of wax paper, and she tries to say something to him, tries to apologize, but he roughly turns away and walks out, head down, ignoring all of us.
"Phew,"
somebody says. Dorothy mops her forehead. "You didn't know," I say to the woman. She puts her head in her hands.
"Why am I always, always doing this kind of thing? I shouldn't be allowed out of the house. What is wrong with me?"
"You didn't mean any harm," I say. He knows that. He would have been nicer about the whole thing, except that he's a wreck just now.
"That's it. I am taking a vow of silence,"
she tells me. Dorothy says, "Oh, you don't have to do that. It's all going to be okay. People gotta get through as best they can, you know?"
Come over here and smell these gardenias, I say. They'll change your brain chemistry.
They will?
The woman says, and I shrug.
I really have no idea.
I tell her they might. She laughs. As soon as she's gone, along with all the other customers and their problems, Dorothy turns to me and says, "So, when can you start?"
"Start what?"
"Working here."
"Can I get you to take a job here?"
"Well," I look around.
"Really? Should I go to work?"
And then I know that I definitely should. I'll get to come here every day and smell flowers and talk to people.
"I'm afraid I really don't know much about arranging flowers," I say.
Dorothy shrugs.
"Flowers, smowers, I can teach you that.
What I'm needing is a listen to the story person."
"When can you start?"
"Well, okay," I tell her. "I could start tomorrow, I guess."
She comes around the counter and hugs me. She has a slight limp and straight gray hair pushed back off her face and a sweet, sweet smile that transforms her tired eyes.
"Come tomorrow at 10, okay?
We can go over some things.
I can't pay a lot, but we'll figure out something.
Part-time, okay?"
"Yes. Yes, part-time is great."
I'm halfway down the block before I remember I need to tell her something critical. So I hurry back to the shop and call out to her.
"Dorothy? One thing, I'm moving away at the end of the year, so this is temporary. Is that okay?"
She comes out, holding on to a rose stem.
"What? Oh, no, that doesn't matter a bit," she says. "Whatever."
And that appears to be that. I'm employed.
I write to Patrick. "Studying Brooklyn today with Jessica as my teacher. Pizzas are pies. Metro is Subway. Convenience store is a bodega. Hashtag who knew?"
"You are doing awesome. Watch out, or soon you'll be saying forget about it."
"Also, I accidentally may have gotten a job in a flower shop."
"I didn't know people could accidentally turn into florists. Are you happy about this?"
"I think so. I also think I need to do a bunch of New York things. Carnegie Hall, jazz clubs, Brooklyn Bridge, Empire State Building, Broadway show, Times Square."
Patrick, shuddering involuntarily, can barely type. "Report back. I'll be cheering you on from the curmudgeon seats inside my dungeon."
"You wouldn't come?"
"Marnie, hello. I thought I explained to you that I am an introvert. Hashtag ugly. Hashtag recluse. Hashtag irredeemably misanthropic."
And what is there to say to that? Except what I do say, which is, "Open your door when you get a chance. I've left you a present. A pitiful attempt to make up for your beautiful sculpture that I smashed. Though nothing ever can. I know."
"Marnie, Marnie, Marnie. You didn't have to do this. That sculpture was from another time. Another Patrick, who doesn't exist anymore. Not worth thinking about. You did me a favor. Hashtag, out with old."
29. Marnie. One evening, as I'm putting away the supper dishes and Noah is sitting at the table scrolling through his phone, he says,
"I just want you to know that losing you was the worst thing that ever happened to me."
I look out the window at the lights of Brooklyn. I can see right into other people's apartments, see them gesturing. A man and woman are talking in one window. In another, a man is lifting a barbell high into the air. My stomach has dropped to my knees. With difficulty, I manage to say,
"Noah, come off it. You don't believe that, even while you're saying it."
"I do believe it," he says.
"It's true.
And now some other guy has you. I lost out, and it was my own fault."
He shakes his head and smiles at me.
"I'm just not husband material. Way too fucked up."
"Way," I agree.
He says a whole bunch of things after that. He says, "Forgive me for saying this, but I don't think you are even remotely in love with the guy you're seeing now." He says, "Remember the time we woke up in the middle of the night and we were already having sex, but both of us had been sound asleep and we don't know how it happened?" He says, "This is kind of like..."